Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the Fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, an hour of local food and drink news with Alan Alder and me, Matt Bentman. Sue Bailey can't be with us today, but she should be back for the next episode, and you will still hear her voice in today's features.
Yeah, today we bring you news of a big event coming up at the end of the month in the centre of Cambridge, with lots of food and drink to enjoy, alongside a celebration of cycling.
Meanwhile, Sue's had a delicious time at a local wine cellar, Wee Vinateca, and received good food and wine pairing advice too.
And also to do with wine, I've been talking to Chong Chong Bo of the much-missed Amphora about her three wine and cheese matching evenings coming up very soon. And she tells me some of her future plans too.
And calling all gardeners and volunteers, your local community food garden needs you. More on that later. We also have our regular features, free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup.
But first, the Cambridge Criterium is a cycling event happening later this month, and it has an impressively big food festival attached. If you're interested in cycling as a sport, a pastime, or a fun family thing to do, it will be of interest. But if you're just interested in the food, there would be everything you could wish for as well. I spoke to James Hems, one of the organisers, about it, and since this is Flavour, we focus mostly on the food angle. James, you're involved in this cycling event that's coming up at the end of the month. Can you just say very briefly what it's about?
It's taking place on Sunday the 25th of August. It's an all-day event on Jesus Green. It's free to attend, and on top of the cycling, we're actually organising the largest single-site food festival, effectively, in Cambridge since the Food Park Night Markets that took place, I think, last in sort of 2017. So yeah, it's kind of happens that way that we organise one event and lo and behold, we end up organising two at the same time.
Right, well, I'm very pleased about the food event. Who's going to be there then?
So we've got a good mixture of, I guess, well-known acts, if you think about the music kind of festival idea, with Wandering Yak, Karif Catering, Hong Kong Hit Rap and Pizza Mondo.
Karif Catering there?
Yeah, so Karif Catering, it's Sasa. He's the person, very familiar with anyone that's been to his food truck will know him well. He's very charismatic and very just nice person to be with. And the focus is really Jamaican, South African fusion. So you'll get your jerk chicken, their lamb, and also if you try goat, that's
quite a Caribbean favourite.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, who else?
So Hong Kong Hit Rap, Pizza Mondo, and then we've got some, I guess, up-and-comers that some people have been less familiar with, but really kind of specialising in areas. Tiberius, who's running a street barbecue, and Scotty, who's running Scotty's Hot Scotch Eggs. You can guess what Scotty's doing. We've got Jack's Gelato, the Churros Bar, who are kind of doing our sweets and treats. And then we have Ollie from Brewboard, who's actually launching his non-alcoholic beverage with us.
Oh, well, that's the perfect time to launch a non-alcoholic beverage, isn't it? Because certainly I don't like drinking alcohol during the day. But, oh, right, that's good, that's good. So there is food and drink, and I suppose there's drinks for children as well, because it's...
Yes, so Ollie is bringing his Brewboard truck, which many, if they've been to the Cambridge United football matches or other events, will probably be familiar with, and from there they'll be selling soft drinks as well. So
yeah.
You go to Ollie if you want anything to drink.
Right, okay. And I can't picture this. Are all the street food vans going to be together in one area on Jesus Green? Will there be tables to sit at, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I guess if you imagine a big event, village-style event, you'll be able to see a big screen which will be showing the cycling. And then from there, you'll have food trucks on either side of the big screen. And then behind the big screen will be the Brewboard food truck. So, and in that kind of space in the centre, we're hoping to have some deck chairs, some tables, but obviously we would welcome everyone to just bring along their own picnic mats and glasses and whatever they want, because whether you're enjoying the food that's on offer or if you want to just bring the family just to enjoy being outside on Jesus Green together, then we're hoping to have other activities for children and alongside the cycling entertainment
too. Right, okay, well let's hope that the weather's good.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It sounds quite weather dependent.
It does, but I suppose the people of Britain have very much got used to the fact of preparing for rain even in the middle of summer, and I think we'll enjoy it and it'll be a memory to be had whether it rains or shines.
Yeah, right. I know, James, you were quite involved with the food trucks on Hobson Square, and I know that had to come to an end, which is unfortunate. But might doing this food with the cycling event, is that spurring you on to do more foodie things?
Yes, we'll see how this one goes. It was certainly one of those sort of ideas that came up and then bumped into two other local residents, and I have to say that this is an event that's entirely run by residents. We've had support from the council, so I don't want to sort of disregard that, but this is an event that's been put together by three slightly crazy individuals that thought, well, how hard can it be? Turns out it's a lot harder than we first thought. So, when everything's finished, packed up and cleared away, we'll probably sit down and figure out what's next. We'd obviously love to do it again. I guess it's a case of how crazy it is to do it again.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. And I hope you do come up with something.
Thanks.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a really good day. And James was awarded the British Empire Medal in the New Year's Honours for his services to the community. And you may remember that he featured on Flavour a few years ago when we reported on his initiative to bring food vans to Hobson Square and to the Clay Farm Community Garden to help the new community there knit together. And this event is similarly focused on bringing people together. It'll be a fun event.
The cycling event itself includes professional cycle racing on traffic-free Cambridge roads that encircle Jesus Green. And you can watch the action on a giant screen on Jesus Green near the Lido. There's also amateur races, novelty races, a chance to cycle with the professionals too. You'll be able to cycle past St John's Chapel, Jesus College, and down Victoria Avenue along Chesterton Road, and all the routes will be traffic-free. You can see the details on the Cambridge Criterium website. And as James said, this takes place on Sunday, the 25th of August, and it's free to attend.
And now details of free food available in and around Cambridge. And the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, and that exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
And today's look at Olio shows us that Will Run in Coleridge Road, he's back with a vengeance, and he's got stacks of bread to give away, ranging from bagels to tiger rolls, paninis, donuts, double chocolate chip cookies, Belgian buns, iced chocolate donuts, brioche buns and crumpets. So if you fancy any of those and you live in town, why not send him a quick message via the Olio app? Also today, Simina on Stanley Road by the river has a jar of couscous available, whilst Mike in Barnwell Road has a packet of red and a packet of white wine yeast. Happy for you to take it if you promise to use it, he says. Sounds like there's a little bit of a backstory there. And finally, mentioning these because I love them, BG in Arbury, he's giving away packets of scampi fries. That's the original flavour, not the lemon ones. And that concludes our quick glance at Olio for today. That's an important distinction.
Well, I'm fascinated, Matt. Which ones do you like the best, the original or the lemon?
I would say I like them both equally, but in terms of longevity, as in how many can you just keep eating, I'd probably go for the original.
Right, OK. Thank you. There's also a free app called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants and shops, often at less than half price. And rather than specifying each leftover item, the surplus food is simply repackaged as a magic bag, and it's ready for you to take home, and that is instead of it being put in the bin at the end of the day. Some of the companies that use this regularly are Marks & Spencer at Cambridge Station, Greggs in Cherry Hinton, Nine's Global Buffet, Namaste, Aldi in Histon Road, Pret, Upper Crust at the station, the Co-op in Sawston, Al Pomodoro, Hotel Duvan, and loads of others. Fantastic.
Good. Well, let's move on to our first news break now, beginning with some summer closures. The cafe at Cambridge Cookery School is closed for August, and that will reopen on the 4th of September. Meanwhile, the other Amelie places, they're still open.
Maison Clément in Derby Street is closed for a refit and will open early in September. But while it's closed, Maison Clément in Hills Road will be open every day of the week, not just Monday to Saturday.
Wine and cheese tastings are happening at Culinaris in Mill Road with Amphora's Chong Chong Bo. The first is on the 14th of August at 7:30, and we'll be trying soft and gooey cheeses to begin with, along with a variety of white and rosé wines. No reds, to understand which wines pair with which cheeses and why. You can book that via the Amphora website. The cost is £46. And on the 28th of August, it's a return of the reds, with tastings of proudly pungent cheeses and a variety of wines. On the 4th of September, it's mature and mellow cheeses. We'll be talking with Chong about these events later on in the programme.
There's a tasting event at the Indian Ocean restaurant in Histon. Seven courses for £65, with each meat and fish course having a vegetarian alternative. And there's a course of quail roulade, which sounds pretty good to me. To book, phone them between 4 and 10 p.m. And the number is Cambridge 232466.
Chef Ben Sulston has a Moroccan feast on the 7th of September at the Hatch Coffee House in a Dutch barn in Knapwell Wood Farm. It's a fantastic menu with plenty of choices, including zalouk, which is a warm, spicy aubergine and tomato salad. There's also carrot and cumin salad with orange flower dressing, grilled harissa chicken, cod kofta and coriander sauce, date pistachio and coconut truffles. The cost for that is £57.92. There is a selection of wines from Thorn Wines, which can be bought on the night. And there's a complimentary drink at 7 p.m. with the food served at 7:30.
Yeah, that does sound good.
Mm.
There's afternoon tea at Thrive Cafe in Norfolk Street coming up on the 8th of September at 3:30. The menu includes sweet potato scones with cream and jam, lemon pie with passion fruit meringue, and also a French ratatouille tartlet with aubergine, peppers and tomato, and tea. The cost is £39, and you can book now with a £10 deposit. And we'll have more news later.
OK, there's more hot sunny weather forecast, so we can safely say that we are deep into barbecue territory. But what wines go best with a barbecue? In the first of our new series about food and wine pairing, Sue spoke with Wee Vinoteca's Duncan Gammy, an ex-sommelier, so well-placed to offer advice.
With barbecuing, what we tend to find is the way we're cooking is adding intensity. You've got smoke, you've got char, you're adding all this complexity. And so a really good wine can introduce a nice bit of acidity and fruitiness to kind of counter and balance that pairing, really.
Often a lot of people just want to have beer, but frankly, that doesn't do anything for me. I'd much rather have a decent wine. So you have got three different red wines for us to try today. Why red? Because I tend to drink more white than I do red, but you've got one here that's rather an interesting one. Tell me more.
So the first one we've got is technically, it's almost like a blend between a white and a red. So it's a blend of a red grape variety, Syrah, or as we sometimes know it a bit better, Shiraz, and the grape variety Viognier. And this blend of grape varieties is quite common in the south of France, in the Rhône Valley. And basically, Shiraz can sometimes be quite big and intense. And so adding a white grape variety introduces a lovely element of softness and fruitiness to the blend. And that's very much what we're kind of looking for here. So this wine is incredibly pale in color, very kind of nice balanced alcohol, nice high acidity. You could even stick this, and I do, you could stick this in the fridge for like 10, 15 minutes before you drink it, just to make it even more refreshing on a hot day. That freshness adds a lovely kind of balance to the richness from barbecuing. But I generally speaking find that reds can stand up to the flavours of barbecuing better than whites.
What we've got to taste it with are some chicken satay skewers and some pork satay skewers. And pork is a more traditional Thai satay meat originally. Now, of course, chicken has become very popular, and we've got a chili sauce for the pork skewers and a peanut satay sauce for the spicy chicken skewers. And these are from literally just down the road, the White Horse pub that's also a Thai restaurant, a Luk Thai. They in fact are going to be having a barbecue coming up at, towards the end of the month, so it's rather nice to be able to combine some two local ventures together. So let's see how they actually do go together and how they actually do taste. Duncan, you go first.
I'm going to dive straight into the pork one, if that's okay. I think with dishes like this, the fun element is that we're introducing spice, we're introducing chili heat, and that can sometimes be a difficult thing when it comes to wine, any alcoholic drinks in general. What you tend to find is the spice and the alcohol will double down on each other. And so if you have a very spicy dish with a wine that's got high levels of alcohol, that kind of burning sensation from the chilies will intensify.
So that's not so comfortable.
It's a personal preference thing. So I tend to say it's not good nor bad. It's just something we've got to consider. A lot of people out there really love spice. And so there are lots of people that will have 14, 15% red wines with spicy food and they love it. Mm. There are other people, and I probably find myself more in this category, and I find most people in this category, that like to try and counter the spice with something either lower in alcohol, like this, or softer or fruitier in style.
So what percentage of alcohol is this wine?
So this wine is 12.5, which is very low for red wines. Kind of your standard range would be anywhere from 12 up to about 15. So to have a light red wine that can be chilled, I think it's one of the reasons why I like this. It's summer.
And what's its name again?
So it's called the Le Campagier. So the Chateau du Campagier is a producer from the south of France. So I think the most important thing here is that it's really bright and fresh. And so if you were to think about almost that kind of really nice refreshing note of cranberry juice, it's kind of like that. If you were to think of your kind of classic red wine, you've normally got big punchy alcohol, you've got drying tannins, whereas this is soft, fruity, lots of red fruit, almost even sometimes you get things like almost peach, but it's super refreshing.
I mean, I'd almost say it's sort of zingy in flavour. I really like
it. It's for those that aren't able to drink it with us, it's one of these ones where there's almost a very lovely kind of Ribena-esque characteristic to it, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it is. There's some wines that are very big and very serious and require decanting in the right type of food, and there's some wines that are just fun and very drinkable. I sometimes refer to them as session white wines or session red wines, and I feel that this is that. Typically, Shiraz or Syrah, as it's known in France, is loads of big black fruit, and it can be made to be this big, intense red wine. But in this case, they've used winemaking techniques to make it a bit softer and approachable. And the fact that there's a white grape variety, Viognier, in here as well, kind of helps add to that refreshing characteristic.
And also, I'm noticing, as you said about the spice wine combination, my mouth is slightly more tingly after having drunk some wine and then eaten a little bit more of the satays.
One of the things we do here at the business is we teach WSET qualifications in wine. And one of the elements we do there in food and wine pairing, often we'll use something like a spicy cracker or a spicy biscuit, and we'll get people to chew that on one side of their mouth, and then they'll take a drink of a wine, ideally with high levels of alcohol, like 14-15%. And the sensation that they notice on the side that they ate the chili cracker on versus the side that they didn't is really profound. And so that's a really good example of how spice and alcohol work together.
Satay is quite a sort of heavy spice. So there's turmeric and there's marinade in coconut. And then, of course, you have the satay peanut sauce, which has quite a lot of spice in it as well.
It's one of those ones where when we think about food and wine pairing, sometimes we want to go for congruent pairings where you're kind of matching flavors. But I think with this, especially when now you've got the nice chicken, you've got the nice dipping sauce, there's a lot of intensity and flavor going on here. So I think that having something that almost balances that, that almost acts as a little palate cleanser between each bite, that's a nice thing to have. And so that's why I tend tend to lean for these fun, fruity style wines instead.
I'm just going to take a sip of wine and compare it with the chicken satay.
It's one of those ones where the benefit here is that this is really kind of universal. So if we were to think of something like a really classic Argentine Malbec that's big and robust, that would work really nice if you're doing steak or something intense and red meaty. Whereas when you start to get to the white meats like chicken, it's maybe a bit too big. And I find that this wine is a great all-rounder. So if you're having chicken, if you're doing burgers or even steaks, it will stand up to it. If you happen to even do tuna or salmon, this chilled is a really nice option. So it's got good universal appeal.
And I can see you've got two other very interesting looking, more purist red wines over there. Can you tell me more about these two and what you would recommend those for?
So the Le Cabrier, which we've been drinking, whilst lovely, the lightness and the freshness of it can sometimes leave your classic red wine drinker wanting a bit more. And so for the next two options, we've gone for slightly more classic style reds. The Healing Coup, rather deceptively with the name, is actually Aussie Shiraz blend. The name comes from the fact that the vineyards used to be field for Highland cattle. And the fact that I'm Scottish and that we sell this wine, it's pure coincidence. It is also one of our best selling wines. And again, that's nothing to do with it. It's the only Scottish themed wine we have in the shop. Basically, what we've got here is Shiraz and a grape variety called Mataro. Now, Mataro, if we were in France, is called Mouvedre. Yeah, and it's often blended in wines like Côte d'Rhône or Châteauneuf de Pape. If we were to cross over to Spain, it would be called Monastrell, but in Australia, they call it Mataro. What we end up here with, nice, soft, fruity style red, but it's got a bit more intensity than the Le Cabrier that we're drinking now. So unsurprisingly, Australian wine and barbecue food have this natural link. So there's this thing we refer to it as regionality. You can think about it, what grows together goes together. And so the people in Australia making wine are having their classic Aussie barbecues, they're trying their wine, and intentionally or unintentionally, they're almost saying to themselves, if this wine was a bit softer and a bit fruitier, it would be lovely with this rich, smoky barbecue food that we're having. Mm. And you see similar things happen in Spain with Albarino, in Argentina with steak and their classic Argentine Malbec. So it's not surprising that an Aussie Shiraz blend goes really fantastically here. The benefit with the Healing Coup is it's a nice all-rounder. This is a really good go-to for my family when we do like burgers on the barbecue or sausages.
And then the rather fashionable Clio. What one is that and where's that one from?
So the Clio is a Greek red wine that we've got in. I really love Greece. I think that the wines are incredibly food friendly. This is made a blend of pretty much 50-50 of Merlot and a Greek grape variety called Argiorgitio. I think, again, we've taken another step up in intensity. The Clio is definitely the sort of thing I'd be reaching for when you're having those more classic red meat barbecues. If you've got a nice steak and you want something that's going to go with it, a bit more tannin, there's a little bit more alcohol, it's a little bit more big structured style red. Merlot is nice and soft and drinkable and a little bit plummy, but Argiorgitio has a bit more tannin and a bit more intensity, slightly leaning more towards like the brambly red fruits and black fruits.
That does sound really rather nice. There's a lot of Greek grape varieties that are really pretty unfamiliar to most people.
Yeah, Greece, I think it's the right decision for them as a country, but they've realised that their kind of ace or their hole-in-one sort of thing is the fact they have these amazing grape varieties. You can be rewarded with these incredible wines that represent really good value for money. But I think especially for things like barbecues or kind of like big Sunday roast style red meat, I think the Greek red wines are brilliant. The Greek white wines with seafood as well.
This is where the benefit of a wine shop such as yourselves come in, because people can actually ask you for recommendations, particularly if it's special events.
Yes, I mean, I think we've always recognised that our customers are inherently a little bit adventurous. You know, they are, we sometimes refer to adventurous foodies. So they have a deep passion in the idea of good food and good drink, and they're willing to be a bit adventurous and try these new things if we can explain to them why. And I think it's one of those ones that if someone can come in and they are cooking Sunday roast lamb and the options include something like a Greek red, if it's in our shop, they tend to feel pretty confident that it's good. We have this idea of less but better. So the range is deliberately small. And that means that if it's made it to the shop, it's kind of had to go through a very strict criteria. And so we're lucky that our customers have got that trust in us that we say, yeah, it's Greek. And yeah, you've never heard of the grape variety. And this could be a little bit of a risk, but have some faith in us. Yeah. They tend to be rewarded with a lovely wine.
I like that. Trust me, I'm an ex-sommelier as well, which is why I was really interested in when you told me about this before, because with that type of background, you do know about wines and foods.
I think the fun thing is here you're having a bit of an experiment, and when you try a Greek red wine. You're pushing your comfort zone. You're trying new things. Sometimes you might go, oh, well, it was enjoyable. I maybe prefer a Spanish Rioja or something like that. But often what happens, you go, that was really cool. That was a really lovely thing to try. And I think if you have an exciting bottle of wine with some nice food and some great company, it's pretty hard to not have a great time.
Well, thank you so much, Duncan. And I look forward to further tastings.
Me too.
Yeah, I bet you do. The wines again were Le Campouge from France, Highland Coo from Australia. Highland Coo is like Highland Cow, you know, Scottish pronunciation. But it's spelt H-E-I-L-A-N-C-O-O. Highland Coo from Australia, and finally Clio from Greece. And they're all easy to find on We Vinoteca's excellent website. And a reminder that We Vinoteca is at Burwash Manor and also in Hitchin. But it's interesting what Duncan said about Greek wine, because Greek food is also very highly regarded. And Susanna from Meadows once said to me that the topography of Greece lends itself to very small farms. There are great flat areas. Mm. So many more of the farms are owned by the local farmers rather than big, you know, big industrial combines. So there's more pride is taken in the production of the food and the wine. Interesting.
Yeah, good about the wines as well, because they used to really take a pasting back in their 70s or so, didn't they?
Oh, with Retsina. Yes, I can still remember Retsina.
Well, time for a bit more news now. And the Plough and Fleece in Horningsea has a beer festival. That's from the 23rd to the 25th of August. There'll be live music, food with vegan and veggie options, and ales, lagers, gins and cocktails.
Van der Lyle's Pizza is now available at Scott's all day, and that's until the end of August.
Fitzbillies has an August special, the Raspberry Ripple Bun, in which there is a raspberry ripple compote, and the bun is topped with a little bit of sweet icing.
Market news. Caxton Farmers Market takes place tomorrow, the 11th of August. That's from 9.30 till 12.30. And the next Grandstands Farmers Market is on the 25th of August.
Now, there's a lot of work being done at CoFarm, and volunteers are very welcome, but you will need to book via their website. Now, some of the dates available for this are the 12th of August at 10 a.m, 13th of August at 5 p.m, 15th of August at 10 a.m and 1:30, and the 16th at 10 a.m. There's a variety of jobs that need doing, including planting, harvesting, watering, weeding and trimming, and washing the produce.
There's a coffee festival at the Yard in Ely on the 7th and 8th of September with cupping, latte art, bean roasting, all available to book. Also, there's an evening of competitive fun for baristas on the 7th at 7 p.m. And if you are a barista and you want to take part, email Andy, that's A-N-D-I, Andy at silveroakcoffee.co.uk by the 1st of September.
Yeah, some wine news now, and the wine rooms in Hills Road have two new wine flights to celebrate the Paris Olympics. Each flight is £15 for three 50ml glasses of high-quality wines with tasting notes. There's a white flight and there's a red flight. Also, Cambridge Wine Merchants, they've got an evening of summer wine tastings. There's going to be bubbles, pinks, whites and lighter reds. It's at the Cherry Hinton Road branch of Cambridge Wine Merchants, and that's on the 21st of August at 7 p.m. and you get six wines for £30. And on the 18th of September at 7 p.m, you can experience the flavours of Argentina, along with specially curated menu that highlights Argentine's meats and other produce. Each course will be paired with an Argentine wine. It's £70 per person, and it takes place at Ridley Hall. Details are on the cambridgewine.com/events page.
And that's the news for now. More later. Coming up on Flavour, we talk to Chong Chong Bo about her wine and cheese pairing events and what else she's planning in the near future. We hear from the community garden in Brooklands Avenue, and we get some updates from social media. That's after the break in about a minute and a half's time. Don't go away.
Cambridge 105 Radio. New Music Generator is the programme where we champion the local music scene. On Wednesdays and Saturdays, Tim Willett and Rebecca May have the latest releases, studio interviews and live sessions.
The message came through saying, oh, we've listened to your track. And I was like, oh, I've had that before, it's fine, it's nothing. And then I got a DM from Rebecca on Insta and I was like, oh, okay, that's going to get played.
New Music Generator online at cambridge105.co.uk, Wednesdays at 7 and Saturdays at 4. On Cambridge 105 Radio.
Didn't quite get the A-level results you hoped for? Don't worry. With St Andrews College, Cambridge, your future is still bright. At St Andrews, we specialise in helping students retake their A-levels to achieve the grades they need. Our expert tutors support you every step of the way with personalised learning plans tailored to your needs. Join a community where success is just a step away. With small class sizes, dedicated teachers and a proven track record, St Andrews College, Cambridge is your path to academic excellence. To start your journey to success, visit standrewscambridge.co.uk.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour, and we're going to continue our theme of wine and food pairings now. Chong Chong Bo, who ran the highly esteemed Amphora in Devonshire Road until the landlord decided he had other plans for the place and Amphora had to close, has teamed up with Zoltan at Culinaris to bring 3 nights in which the combinations of different wines and cheeses will be explored. I met Chong in Culinaris earlier in the week. Chong, you're doing some cheese and wine tastings at Culinaris coming up. You've got 3 different evenings with different sorts of cheese. So clearly this matching of wine with cheese is a complex area.
Oh, absolutely. I think people tend to think of cheese as a generic category and just try and pair wine with it. But actually, cheeses are so very different. In fact, this is an oversimplification even just with 3 events, but it was a good way to actually split them up. We've got some soft cheeses. So the first event is soft and gooey. The second one is proudly pungent with all the washed rind and particularly smelly cheeses. And the third one is mellow and mature. So those are the hard cheeses that have had extra affinage. So that seemed a natural way to divide up the complex cheese category from my point of view.
Right, so that divides up what wines would go with them as well then?
Yes, again, a little bit of a generalisation, but you wouldn't pair the same wine with a fresh, young, acidic goat cheese, for instance, compared with an extra mature Comté. Those would have quite different pairings. So I'm keen to explore the different groupings of wines that would go with each category of cheese. The more pungent a cheese is, the more strong the flavours are, the stronger the wine that you can choose to pair with it. So the wines I choose for the second and third event will be very different from the wines that I choose for the first event.
Well, I noticed on the description of the events you said that with the soft and gooey cheeses there would be no red wines, it would be white and rosé.
So generally, very strong-bodied red wines just don't work with those soft, fresh cheeses. It's a bit of a clash, and so there might be one, but I wanted to set expectations. So if someone was very much a red wine drinker and despised the category of white wines, they wouldn't come to the event and be very disappointed.
The mature and mellow cheeses you talk about there, about releasing amino acids and lipids. Now, the lipids makes me think that you would need quite an acidic wine. Is that right?
It's quite a complex area. The fat content of soft cheeses is actually much higher than hard cheeses. So people talk about the role of lipids in general in food and wine pairing as to neutralize tannin. So this is the same reason why when you drink tea you put a splash of milk in, so you don't have that drying effect, that astringency on the palate. So it's the same sort of thing, but I don't think it's as simple as that. So a very tannic red wine doesn't go with a very fresh gooey cheese with a high fat content, so it's much more complex than that. I mean, salt also has a softening effect, so the Romans famously blended in seawater with their red wine to make it less astringent and more drinkable. So there are lots of ways, so it's not a one-to-one ratio of, well, this goes with this, so lipids tame tannins, or umami wines require full body, you know, it's not a one-to-one ratio, it's a harmonization. And then of course there are the chemical overlaps that make pairings particularly compelling. So I think whenever you're doing food and wine pairing, cheese and wine pairing, you're considering a multiplicity of factors. And we'll explore some of that during the sessions.
Right. So, well, how will they operate? Will there be several cheeses and several wines, and you'll try each wine with each cheese? Or?
Yes. So we plan to have six cheeses per session along with six wines so as not to overwhelm people. And there'll be general groupings, so I will choose six wines which I think will go with the selection of cheeses rather than a one-to-one. There might be one particular wine which goes particularly well with a single cheese in the repertoire, but I think as a group, those are the wines that work. I might also throw in a couple of wines that don't work just to demonstrate to people, well, this is a pairing. For instance, you know, a very heavily oaked Chardonnay or a heavily oaked white wine in general is going to overwhelm the delicate flavours of a soft, young cheese. And I'd like to demonstrate to people why that doesn't work. And similarly, a very strong red wine is not going to work with that profile of cheese. So it's important for people to be able to experience that for themselves.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And on the night, will there be wine and cheese available to purchase?
Yes. Yes. So I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult with the soft cheeses, but I'm sure Zoltan can be persuaded to cut some if people want to take some home, which I know that I always do after an event.
Yes. Right, so this is Cheese and Wine. Have you got any, in the future, any more thoughts on what you might do? I was thinking of in terms of tastings, but also in terms of what's, you know, post-Amphora, have you got your...
So, plans? Sadly, there are very few venues to be explored because the city has very strict licensing laws, and I haven't so far come across a venue which I think is suitable for a next venture. I will continue to do collaborations. I have a series of fine wine symposia planned and looking for a suitable home for those events. So in fact, if you have access to a great venue for, let's say, 15-ish people, then please get in touch.
Right, that sounds fantastic. A fine wine symposium, what would that involve?
So over the past 3 years, I've been slowly amassing very special wines, most of which I have one, perhaps two bottles of. The idea is that these should be enjoyed over a few hours with a group of people who really appreciate them. I've done a couple in the past at Amphora, but sort of ran out of time in the end. These would be themed evenings. For instance, there could be an aged Barolo, an aged Bordeaux. I mean, aging is certainly a theme. The wines become much more complex and interesting with age, as does cheese, in fact.
Mm.
So I'm keen to do some more of those because they were so rewarding when I did them. And this is something that I could easily do in a separate venue that wouldn't be as complex as my normal wine tastings.
Yeah, I hope it goes ahead. It sounds fantastic. Thanks very much, Chong.
And some late news from Chong. The first of the tastings had only one ticket left on Thursday. It's probably now sold out, but worth checking. The dates of the two remaining nights are proudly pungent on the 28th of August, mature and mellow on the 4th of September, and each night is £46. You can find more details and a place to book on the Amphora website.
Oh, sounds very good. What a complex area matching food and wine is.
Yeah, absolutely. But what a rewarding one when you get it right. Yeah. Fantastic.
On to our final news roundup now. And here is news about some food-related courses coming up next term. At Comberton Village College, there are weekly classes in Delicious Curry and Taste of the Middle East. At Melbourne Village College, there is street food from around the world, and applications for a place on those can be made now.
There are lots of classes available now to book at Cambridge Cookery School in September. For example, classes in knife skills, classic sauces, making handmade pasta, bread baking, fish cookery, pastry making, Indian curries, croissants and classic French pastry, and so on. And that's just September.
Cambridge Sustainable Food has a courgette cook-along on the 13th of August at St Philip's Church in Mill Road. It'll be an afternoon of batch cooking, transforming courgettes into soups, pickles and other tasty treats. All the ingredients and the equipment will be provided, but what is needed is jars for the pickles. So if you have any spare, clean jars that you can take along, they would be most welcome. It's all free, and it takes place from 4 until 7 p.m.
Yeah, well, some out-of-our-area news now. I went to an interesting food night this week at Honey & Co. in Story Street, which is off London's Tottenham Court Road. And on some Monday nights, they have a supper club there with a guest food writer. And this week, it was Mark Diacono, and long-term listeners of Flavour might remember us talking about his book Sour a few years ago. And on this night, the chefs at Honey & Co. cooked from his most recent book on vegetables, and it was very good, and Mark went to each table and chatted with the diners. A few weeks ago, Rosie Sykes was the guest, a night which I wasn't able to get to, unfortunately. But what a nice idea, and worth checking the Honey & Co. website to see what else is coming up.
There's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Yeah, Bushel Box Farm in Willingham has got lots of plum varieties on sale in the shop at the moment. Opal, Violetta, Czar, Purple Pershaw, Swan, Jubileum, Victoria, St Andrew's Gauge, Reeves, Green Gauge, Purple Gauge, and also apricots, and that's in Willingham. And what a joy it is to make a mixed plum crumble. They're fantastic. Heath Fruit Farm in Bluntisham and at Ely Farmers Market on Saturdays has apricots, purple Pershaw, green gauges and discovery apples. And I went to Heath Fruit Farm last Saturday and bought some apricots. They're fantastic. They are so different from the ones you buy at the market or in a supermarket. Yeah. You know, when you eat an apricot, there's often they taste woolly, even if you've left them to soften, they just taste woolly. These don't, they just taste lovely. Mm. So I've got a fridge full of apricots at the moment. At the North Stowe Tap and Social, Alex from Houdini Caterers will be serving tacos on Tuesday from 5 till 9. And I don't know whether this is something you would want to eat or not, but the Science of Magic Mushrooms is at the Junction on the 17th of September at 7 p.m. And that's the social media news.
The Empty Common Community Gardens sits at the end of a line of allotments off Brooklands Avenue, and it runs parallel to Hobson's Conduit, a picturesque babbling stream. Now, 10 years ago, the site was just a muddy bog, and everything first had to be levelled and then drained, and this was done by the Transition Cambridge Group. And the garden has now become one of their sustainability initiatives, using the rules of permaculture, working with nature to grow food and veg using rules like companion planting. Well, last Sunday, I met with Charlotte Singh and a few volunteers as they were pulling out huge clumps of bindweed.
Bindweed everywhere, trying to release the black currants from the bindweed. Because the climate this year, we had a warm winter, so the slug eggs all survived the winter and the snail eggs. I shouldn't just blame slugs, because that's not fair. And then we've been so wet, it's been like slug heaven and plant heaven, bindweed heaven. But the problem is, with the slugs, every time we grow a seedling up, the slugs have just come and eaten it. It's just been a nightmare. So this year we've been growing microgreens for gastropods. It feels a bit hopeless, but the other thing we're doing is tackling the jungle full of bindweed, nettles, and then the odd potato comes up and thinks it's going to work its way through. So we've got potatoes in the ground here under the nettles and bindweed.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be able to dig them up and eat them at least.
Here's something you may not know about the flowers from stinging nettles.
If you take them off and eat them, you get a high from nettle flowers. Yeah. Let's eat them. I have never tried it. I might.
So one of the reasons we're here today is to talk about the fact that you have this monthly permaculture meeting, the first Sunday of every month.
And we meet at 1:30 for those who are new, so we can spend half an hour just going through a sort of basic introduction to permaculture very fast. And then at 2 o'clock, others come who are more into it, and then we discuss what's been happening maybe in the news or in the garden and things. And we had Chris Dowding come down a few months ago. Yeah. So that caused a stir of stuff going on.
Chris Dowding, a pioneer of no-dig gardening since the 80s. Simply put, no digging means no digging. That lets the soil flourish, boosts moisture retention and drainage, and somehow less weeds. And Charlotte's response?
Did we agree with Chris Dowding on no dig, and was he doing it right? Were we doing it right? And of course we were doing it right.
Because what they do at the Empty Common Community Garden is permaculture. Here's Joe. It was his first day volunteering at the garden. I asked him, what is permaculture?
if I remember rightly, it's more about thinking about it as a holistic system. It's having things that live all year round and that maybe support each other.
Copying nature, basically.
Yes.
And that's what permaculture does. It's just recreating a bit of nature, but with useful plants.
Joe was designed for this sort of thing.
I work on nature reserves, so I'm quite used to being outdoors, but I think there's something really nice about small spaces that you feel like you can have quite a big impact on.
But everyone is welcome at the garden, no matter what their experience.
I think one of the things about coming to a community garden is you're gardening and it releases everything, so you talk between yourselves really well. There's no embarrassment or containment, you're just talking. I read somewhere that if you go to someone's house, they stay the host and you stay the guest. Mm. And so there's a dynamic of that going on, and you don't know if you should leave, you know, and they think they should give you a cup of tea and is the toilet clean and all that sort of rubbish. But when you meet in a community space, all that's gone. And then when you're gardening, another layer of inhibition has gone as well, because you're not having to look at each other, you're just doing something together, and it just promotes conversation.
This is what I love over here. You've got a proper water butt.
Proper water trough.
Lovely.
And what's really nice is it's all these little watering cans, and the kids come down and they water everything. They just love watering everything. They water the weeds. It's just non-stop watering.
Plenty of variety down at the garden.
So this is a mulberry bush. Look, you want mulberry?
Oh, yeah.
They're magical things because they're so different you can't buy them.
Why can't you buy them?
You can't put them in a container and sell them, transport them. And then this is an amazing tree. It's Sichuan pepper.
Ah.
Hot as can be, hot and tingly. So in a few weeks that'll be all pink.
This self-sufficiency thing really is amazing, you know, Rick. Like, we sow the seed, right? Nature grows the seed, and then we eat the seed. And then, after that, we sow the seed, nature grows...
Oh, shut up! Shut up! Shut up!
You've got several plant beds here. Some of them have netting, some of them don't.
The reason we haven't got something in every bed is because the slugs ate them.
Oh, OK.
I wasn't joking when I said we were growing microgreens for gastropods. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So because it was such a wet summer, some of the seeds just drowned. They didn't germinate properly. It was a big germination problem this year as well because of the wet conditions. And then when they did germinate, the slugs ate them. Mm. Like here we've got a bed of parsnips. Now I can see 5 parsnip plants in that whole bed.
Yeah.
That was sown 3 times with parsnips this year.
Gosh, that bad.
Yeah, absolutely miserable, heartbreaking in a way.
Yeah.
They don't seem to like beetroots. Beetroots are okay. So there's one courgette there, but there were 6 there. And the Hügelkultur mound over there, that would normally, I mean, it's full of bindweed, it'd be normally covered in pumpkins.
Gosh.
But yeah, we put out pumpkin after pumpkin, just all eaten. No, it's really been crazy year this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's looking like this year could be Charlotte's last.
Yeah, I think I'm going to move next spring. My grandchildren are over in Suffolk, so I'm probably going to go there. But leaving Cambridge is hard. It's got so much going on. And, of course, you make your community, and then you have to leave a garden as well. It's not just the people, it's the gardens and things. So,
because you've been here since the beginning, right?
Yep.
The beginning of the garden.
The very beginning.
Not the beginning of
the
Cambridge.
Beginning of time, do you mean? I know I'm old, but yes, since the very beginning of the garden. I'd said to the council, if they want a garden designed for the community, I'd design it because I'm a garden designer. Mm. And that was 10 years ago. And I thought, went in, designed the garden and never left, which was not my intention at all. But then I suddenly realised you can design a garden, but then you need gardeners. And that's what it needed. It needed gardeners. So I couldn't design it and walk away, because most of the people coming are coming to learn and they're not experienced gardeners. So they need that holding hand.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm finding difficult about leaving, is I need gardeners to take my place. So retired gardeners or gardeners who work part-time or people who just know about gardens or people who have had an allotment and don't want to keep an allotment any longer. but they've still got all that knowledge which they should be sharing, and that's really important. And if you're part of a community garden and you can't, you don't have to dig or anything, you can just pick the fruit and tell people what to do, how to do it, I should say, rather than what to do it. But yeah, it seems to me that there's a mindset about having your allotment and then getting too old to manage it and then just retiring completely from veg growing. Mm. It doesn't have to be like that. You can retire to a community garden and keep up the veg growing, but someone else will do the digging and the sowing and the bending down, getting the little weeds out. Yeah, yeah. We have raised beds for those who can't bend over. It's all wheelchair accessible. So just because things might be difficult in one way or another, doesn't mean you have to stop gardening. I used to have an allotment. This is much better than an allotment. If you're away, someone else is watering. Your tomatoes aren't rotting on the vine because you've gone on holiday. Someone else is picking them and eating them. There's a much more sort of fluid and sort of whole circular thing in a way, because people are helping each other out in different ways. This whole thing about permaculture, diversity creates stability. Mm. That works in nature. The more diverse the area is, the more stable it becomes. But it also works with communities and people. Mm. You know, if you've got a diverse range of people, you've got some that can be in ministry of fun and some that can show others how to sow leeks and plant them out. Yeah, and then you swap recipes and so it goes. You get that diversity, which makes everything much more stable.
That was good. I got a good one that time.
That is so sweet.
Lovely, fat, juicy bumblebee there on the Mung's marigolds. Wings, yeah.
For me, it's like my little mini Eden project. That's what it is. This is Cambridge's mini Eden project. We've got all the things growing and we've got space for people to learn.
10 years ago, when this all started,
I was trying to picture seeing how everything is now. I remember you telling me, like, it was mud.
Yeah, it was bare soil. But really soggy soil, yeah. And I went up to my knees in one place when I came down to have a look. It was just like, I need to crawl home. So I cycled back through Cambridge, like, it was my trousers just completely mud. Yeah, and now it's this luscious place to be. It's, yeah.
What a job to take on.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it if I'd known.
is that true, do you think?
No, it's not. It's been so brilliant for me. I've learned so much about people and about how to live well and what matters in life, really. All the peripheral rubbish just disappears. Mm. Yeah. I've become a better person, definitely. Yeah.
That was Charlotte Singh at the Empty Common Community Garden off Brooklands Avenue. And the garden needs people like her to help it continue, as she said. There are also the desperate need of volunteers. The double whammy of Brexit and COVID has really reduced the number of volunteers coming back. Charlotte thinks it might be because many changed to indoor hobbies and they simply haven't changed back. Whatever the case may be, there are fewer volunteers all across the board. And she heard that on the BBC, so it must be true. So if you found this feature interesting, then do give a thought to visiting the Empty Common Community Garden. Maybe pop along to their monthly permaculture group in their lovely hut that's on site. It's all solar powered. It's got tea and coffee, wood-burning stove in the corner, projector for films and presentations, even a disco ball. All modern cons. So just check out the Transition Cambridge website. And remember, you don't have to commit yourself to anything. The only requirement is to like gardens and like people. And you'll see the dates of when you can go along.
That sounds very good. We've got a couple of minutes to spare, and we've had an email from North Stow Tap and Social about their events. We mentioned before the kitchen takeover by Poudini on the 13th, doing a taco night. There's another kitchen takeover at North Stow Tap and Social on the 20th with Pasta Bar, and on the 27th of August, Rotisserole. And on the 31st, there's a tap takeover from Otherworld, the Scotland brewer. And also, Matt, you might remember Margaret Scratcher, who used to be on Cambridge 105.
Oh, yes.
He's there on the 24th, spinning discs.
Oh, brilliant.
So lots to look forward to at North Stow Tap and Social, if only I could say it.
Yeah.
And there's green onions, signalling the start of our job section. And first up...
Yeah, just a couple today. Van der Lyle is looking for someone to join their front of house team. It's part-time, permanent. It includes waiting and bartending. Hours will be between 8 and 16 hours a week. The pay is £11.50 an hour, and there's a sharing of tips. Send your CV along with a covering letter to hello@vanderlylerestaurant.com.
Yeah, and finally, Finboys is hiring chefs working across Mill Road and the Gog Magog Farm Shop. For more information or to apply, just email info@fin-boys.com or send a direct message to fin_boy_j on Instagram. And that takes us to the end of the programme for today. So don't forget, we are here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, repeated on Mondays at 6 p.m. and Thursdays at 2 p.m. And we're also available as a podcast from all the usual places.
But that's all from Flavour for today. Coming up next is an hour of the Cambridge Music Mix, followed by Home with Gavin Richards at 4 p.m.
We'll be back on the 24th of August with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. So until then,
goodbye.
Me who said that last time. I promised I would bite my tongue until I counted to 10. I said, oh, it's getting hot in here. Must be something in the atmosphere.